Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome to the Small Business Advocate Show, brought to you by IBM. Solutions designed and built for small business. By Administaff. Administaff is good for small business. And by Aflac. Ask about it at work. And now, the man who creates and distributes more multimedia small business information than any other human on the planet.
With classified information like this, I demand the cone of silence.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Hello, America, and good day to our friends around the world. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me today. It's my pleasure, as always. You know, folks, if you've been listening to my show for a while, you know how what I've told you about how I think you what you need to do to survive and to thrive in the 21st century. It's not the Walmart model. It's the small business model. It's the model that says, find out what customers want and give it to them. Walmart gives people what they need, commodities at the lowest price in the world. That's not what, but that's not what your customers, why they're doing business with you. They're not doing business with you because of what they need. They're doing business with you because of what they want. And what they want is customization. What they want is personal service. What they want is for you to give them what they want and remember their name. And what they want is for you to save them time, to make things more convenient and easier for them and to help them do stuff. That's what your customers want. Everybody doesn't want that. There's still plenty of people who are going to do business with Walmart, but the people that you will be successful with, and the only way you'll be successful, is to give people what they want, not what they need. Now, in a Wall Street Journal article this week, there was a long article, if you can find it, you should look for it, on the problems that Walmart is having. Walmart, the bloom is off the rose of Walmart. Now, Walmart's not going to go out of business anytime soon, but their ability to grow has really been hampered by what? You know what? More people are wanting things, and fewer people are needing things. And so guess what? They're moving more towards the companies that are giving them what they want, not what they need. And the article talked about a lot of the big companies, but guess what? That's you too, ladies and gentlemen. Turns out, I've been right all this time. 9 after, right back with Joan Pride with Kiplinger Editors. Stay with us.
Bury the bottle, mama. It's grapefruit wine.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too. Joan is our good friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, which now has lurched into its 85th year in business, the Kiplinger Editors. Joan Pride, welcome back to the show.
Hey there, Jim. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. You're pretty excited, aren't you?
There, as always.
It's like a dream come true, isn't it, Joan?
Well. That's one way to look at it, yeah.
Joan, can we talk about Walmart for a minute?
We sure could.
You read the article, or part of the article that I was...
I started to read it, yeah. It was fascinating.
I was mentioning earlier in the hour, and just to quickly remind folks what I was talking about, there's an article in the journal, the Wall Street Journal this week, my favorite newspaper, about Walmart and their travails. They're having trouble breaking through. I mean, Joan, after you've conquered the world, what is their next Mars?
Right.
So they've conquered the retail world, and so what's happening, though, it's not just that they can't grow anymore because there's nowhere else to grow. The guy in the article, I don't have his name in front of me. Yes, I do. Hang on a second. I want to say his name here. His name is Gary McWilliams, the author of the article. McWilliams says that Walmart has run up against something that they really can't deal with, and that is the way people want to do business these days. They don't just, more and more people are not just wanting the lowest price.
Right.
And they want convenience. They want customization. They want personal service. They want people to, they want to be have you know, save time. And they're, and apparently, Joan, they're willing to pay a little more for it.
People are not used to personal service, and when they get it, they are thrilled.
And see, this is what I've been talking, how many years now, 10 years on the radio, I've been telling small business owners this. And the article, McWilliams talks about all the small business owners that died because of Walmart. Well, you know what, Joan? Most of them died for one reason and one reason only, is if Walmart was the reason. And that is that when Walmart came in, they tried to fight Walmart at their own game.
Right.
And that's a loser.
Yeah.
Because Walmart has one game, and that's the low price.
Exactly.
They're the low price leader. And when once Walmart left, you know, moved out of Bentonville and they started expanding, they won that war, the price war. The price war is over, and we lost. And so it's so interesting to me. And see, Joan, this is just another reason why I believe that the 21st century is a century of the entrepreneur.
Yeah, I can see that.
I believe in 5 years, Walmart will have a serious... I believe in 5 years, Walmart will lose money, not make money.
Yeah, I think you might be right. That'll be interesting to see what happens.
When I think about this, Joan, if Walmart's losing money, that means their volume's off. But now, all that money that's being spent at Walmart, it's not going to just evaporate. It's going to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Right? And where's it going to go, Joan? You've got the answer.
Not Target.
Not Target.
Not Whole Foods.
Well, they'll get some of it.
Okay, maybe.
But most of it will
small go... Small entrepreneurs.
Bingo. Small
business.
Who are
business. Willing to provide good customer service, I think.
Exactly. See, ladies and gentlemen, I told you she was smart. But now this is the news, Joan, and you know, Walmart was not successful in Japan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, they've had problems.
Wow.
And where else? Now he says something. There's another place, a couple other countries. They literally moved out of Germany, I think. They literally were not successful in Germany, mm-hmm. and other areas. I don't see the actual place. Maybe France, I think. Here we go. Last year, it exited South Korea and Germany after failing to adapt to local taste and achieve economies of scale. In Japan, the company's low-price, high-volume approach has struggled in a country where low prices often equate to low quality.
Yeah.
So the global bloom is off that rose, and I don't think this is saying anything about Walmart as much as it's saying about what people want. And I do think, Joan, it has to do with the affluence of Earthlings. I believe Earthlings are becoming more affluent. Don't you think so?
Earthlings, yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it. The global economy, you and I, how many times have you and I reported about how the global economy is picking up?
That's right.
China now has the middle class in China alone, just the middle class in China, is as big as the entire population of the United States.
That's amazing.
So that's not good news for Target, but it's good news for small business owners. And I'm glad
that's
you
right.
thank you for letting me get that off my chest.
Sure, you feel better now?
I know you were hoping that I'd have a little soliloquy, rant. You were hoping I'd have a little rant today, weren't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, now, Joan, I've been building to this crescendo. Because
a crescendo.
Yes, because I've been building to this big. These great pieces of information that you're about to give us on currency.
Oh no!
You being our currency expert.
I don't know. I think you need another crescendo.
Joan, the dollar
is drooping.
It's drooping. It's not funny, ladies and gentlemen. But
it's just strange to call it drooping.
Only Kiplinger, ladies and gentlemen. You don't get this anywhere else but Kiplinger on the Small Business Advocate Show. The dollar is drooping, and I noticed that it was that yesterday, Joan, the dollar was half of a pound, a British pound. It was 2-1.
Wow.
and it was still around 1.4 or so to the euro. Remember when we were talking about the euro, Joan, several years ago, when the euro, you know, euro was only, what, 5 or 6 years old?
Right. I wasn't even sure the euro would survive.
There was talk of it, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, people don't think about a currency being sort of like a brand, do they?
Well, yeah, that's
see,
that's a good point.
The U.S. dollar is like a brand, and the dollar has been so revered that it is the it's been the currency of choice for over a hundred years probably.
Yeah.
And so the dollar has a lot of mystique. It has had a lot of value. The euro now, don't you guys report here that the euro could become the next currency of choice?
Hard to believe, but true.
Yeah. Quick break. We're going to take a quick one, folks. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Bobby Darin to take us out.
In my arms, you know the magic of her charms, 'cause I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover, so I don't have to dream alone.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Lessingame, the Small Business Advocate. And my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you can find the show, the ability to podcast our show, including each individual interview. If you'd like to go back and get one interview, in fact, you can go back all the way to 99. If you find a topic on your mind you'd like to hear an expert or two talk about, then you can go and check our listings in the categories there under the archives, and of course we've got thousands of archives there, thousands of articles on these same topics written by me and my Brain Trust members. You can subscribe to my free newsletter. You can check out our blog while you're there. And that's at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Also, don't forget to check out my knowledge base, which is askjim.biz. And that's where we have small business answers waiting on your questions. Just go there and check it out. No barriers to entry in my websites. If you can get there, we'll let you come on in and hang out with us for free, thanks to our outstanding corporate partners. Joan Pride is our guest. She's all over my website. And we're talking about currency, which is her favorite topic. One of the world's experts on currency, ladies and gentlemen, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Right, Joan?
Let's spend the rest of the hour just talking about this.
You know, but it is fascinating, Joan, and I'm obviously not a currency expert, but I am fascinated by the whole concept of currency. You know, Joan, Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations identified the three most important developments of mankind. You know what he said they were?
What?
The written word.
Yeah.
Economic tables, he was talking about mathematics.
Okay.
And the ability, you know, to do ledgers and that kind of thing. And the third one was money.
Oh, money.
Because money, when people created money, when they created currency, that's what gave rise to trade.
Yeah.
See, because if you have a cow and I have a sheep and we need eggs, we can't do business.
That's right.
If I don't need a cow and you don't need a sheep, then you know we're out of business. But if we can take money and I can sell somebody my cow and then go buy eggs with that money or whatever, that's what currency does.
Right.
And so ever since people started inventing currency, that's how trade took off. And so it's a fascinating topic.
And the trick has been trying to figure out the value of each currency relative to the other.
Exactly.
The rest of them.
That's exactly right. And so if you look at what's happening in the global economy, and you got to do that these days, with the dollar's decline, it does create some problems. And it doesn't need to go down too far. But Joan, with the rest of the world economy starting to pick up and sort of come into their own, they're going to want U.S. goods. And if they can buy those goods at a lower price because our dollar is weaker against those other currencies, that's good for our economy, for our exporting economy.
Right. Oh, right. Exactly.
That's how our manufacturing has been picking up. That's one of the reasons why small businesses are starting factories these days.
That's right.
And so that's a good thing. That part of it is good. But it's not good if the dollar, because the dollar is being held by so many investors and countries. They're holding our dollars in their treasuries.
Right.
And so if it goes too low, though, Joan, they've lost a lot of money on their investment in our dollars. And that's when they start divesting themselves. And so it could be a dangerous thing.
Right. That is a big risk, true.
And one of the things that I hear Steve Forbes talking about a lot is he says we've got to get some of the liquidity out of the economy. And he thinks when that happens, that gold will come down to a price that he thinks it should come down to, and that less liquidity will make the dollar stronger. But you guys say that that's not going to happen until 2008, late 08.
Late 08. So we're looking at basically another year of this.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you know, it's good news and bad news. It's a two-edged sword, but it's something that we, you know, more and more of, I encourage small business owners to pay attention to these kinds of things. Not, you don't have to become an expert at it. Just pay attention to how it works, because, Joan, everybody who has an eBay account, who buys or sells on eBay, is a global trader.
Right. Well, right? And I think the message here is that the dollar, you're not going to see that the highs won't be as high, but the lows won't be as low. And that's because we're not having to carry the rest of the world on our shoulders anymore,
at least
for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. I think, Joan, that you know, that the United States is never going to be probably at the apex, you know, as high above everyone else in the world in terms of the economy. Obviously, we got the biggest economy by more than double. And I'm really not worried about Japan in terms of their overall size of their economy,
right?
But the rest of the world, I think it's a good thing for the rest of the world to be taking their place in the global marketplace, and because we don't need to just buy things from them, they need to be buying from us.
Oh, sure.
That's where the trade imbalance has come
right.
in, hasn't it?
Right. Exactly.
We've been buying their stuff. It's time for them to start buying from us. And trade, Joan, is a good thing. And you know, you remember what Bastiat said about trade?
No, I don't.
When Frederick Bastiat, the French economist and comedian, said, "When goods cross borders, armies don't."
Oh, that's right. That's one of your favorite sayings.
I love that saying. He's exactly right. That's 150-year-old wisdom from Frederick Bastiat. I don't have too many favorite Frenchmen, but he's one of them. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. Stay with us.
And to make the darkness bright, only
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me, Mr. Gracious, Mr. Humble. That's what Joan Pride calls me all the time. And it's good to have you back with us. And Joan, thank you for being here.
Sure, anytime.
That's what you call me, right? Mr. Gracious,
oh,
Mr.
Always.
Humble.
Oh, always, yeah, sure. Yeah. In your dreams.
Joan, would you like to share more of your currency wisdom with us?
Well, I don't want to overwhelm the listeners.
Let's move on and talk about housing.
Thank you.
You know, Joan, when you and I, remember when you heard me say that there was not going to be a national housing bubble?
Yes.
There might be people thinking, well, okay, Blessing, and what about now?
What about now?
Yeah, and I would say, well, I didn't say there wasn't going to be a national mortgage bubble.
Oh, gee.
I said there wasn't going to be a national housing bubble.
We're parsing our words now. Okay.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Oh, you do that.
The housing industry is really taking it on the chin, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it. A huge overhang of unsold inventory, we say. So, which means that this is going to continue for a while.
See, Joan, this is so much like the dot-bomb bust of 90s.
Yeah.
This is so much like the real estate bust of the 80s. This is so much like the Mississippi skiing of the 19th century. This is so much like the tulipomania of the 15th, 16th century.
Well, so much of it is psychologically driven.
Well, yeah. Well, here's the difference. Tulips follow, you know, they just basically die.
Right.
So at the end, you got nothing. The Mississippi scheme was about nothing. There was never anything there. The dot bomb thing, there was nothing there. There was no there there. So when all that crashed, there was nothing left. The difference is, with real estate, you still got the assets.
That's right.
You still got the inventory. So that's good news.
And the thing that's going to cure this is time.
That's right. That's right. And it will get cured as long as the economy keeps going, and as long as employment stays high and unemployment stays low, and people, you know, and the way our economy is going, it will get cured. This will all work out. In fact, Joan, as you know, you've been tracking the financial markets. The subprime thing is already old news.
Right.
They've already put that to bed.
Last week, the stock market decided that the bad news coming out of the banking industry of their quarterly earnings reports, which were bad, indicated that the bottom had been found in this mess, and that things were going to start looking better, at least in the whole mortgage market.
And see, Joan, when the dot bombs happened, there was no opportunity. Nobody wanted. The only opportunity was for people who wanted to go buy used furniture and computers, which wasn't much.
Right.
But now with real estate, Joan, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Right now might be a great time to go out and buy property that's gone into foreclosure.
Right, exactly. Especially since with rates coming down a little bit, you might get a fairly good deal on your financing.
Folks, negotiate hard for those things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you a little tip, ladies and gentlemen. If you can possibly get to the actual owner of the real estate, now you might have the real estate that's for sale, that's been gone into foreclosure or whatever, however it's available, you might have to it might be listed with a realtor, probably is listed with a realtor. Don't try to avoid paying the real estate fee. That's not what you're trying to do. But do your best to get to the person who owns or is responsible for who owns the property. In other words, the bank. Negotiate with them. Don't negotiate with the realtor. I've had luck with this. The realtor will get the commission, but I don't negotiate with realtors. I negotiate with the owners.
Yeah.
And so, folks, I recommend that you do that, and you'll get your best deal if you do that. But you got to negotiate hard. So there's opportunity out there, Joan, and because of that, that's the reason why, as you say, there will be, you know, they work out of this thing, and it'll come out all right on the other end. It's just going to take a while. Anything else on the real estate, Joan, that we need to talk about?
Well, let's see. No, pretty much not great news for a while. Unfortunately.
But Joan, look at this, though. You guys report housing starts slump to 1.25 million, down 100,000 from this time last year. Joan, that's still over a million houses.
That's right.
You know, I think we need to put things in perspective.
Yeah. And it says sales of existing homes will slip by 400,000 to 5.3 million. So homes are getting sold out there.
Well, yeah. And think about it. I mean, that's like complaining about 2% growth on a $13 trillion economy.
Right.
That's a lot of production.
That's
Let's keep things in perspective here, folks. Let's not lose our head here. 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. They call me Pollyanna around here. Stay with us. Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're rocking and rolling with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, I like to tell people about your website because it's a good one, kiplinger.com. Folks, you can find a lot of good stuff there, a lot of free stuff, but they also have some stuff that they will reveal to you even to a greater degree if you're a subscriber of one of their publications. And as you know, the Kiplinger Letter is just celebrating their 84th anniversary. What about that, folks? A family business.
Wow.
In the financial publishing industry that's still a family business and still thriving after 84 years, now in third generation. That is some kind of a success story, Joan.
I know. It's pretty amazing.
And boy, howdy, did we have fun last week with the patriarch.
Oh, he was great.
Mr. Austin Kiplinger.
He was great.
A national
As
treasure,
always.
Ladies and gentlemen. A national treasure. One of my great regrets, Joan, is that I don't live close enough so I can have lunch with him at least once a year or twice a year or something.
Yeah.
You're so fortunate. You're like a floor away from him all the time.
I know.
What a great guy. 89 years old, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, so Kiplinger.com, and the letter is Kiplinger Letter, and also that's the weekly flagship, and then also the biweekly, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture. Three of them, three biweeklies, and also the magazine, Joan.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So, also available on newsstands. And, Joan, I bet you got a phone number, don't you?
We do. It's a toll-free number, 800-544-0155.
There you go. And don't forget to ask them for that Jim Blassingame free trial.
See what happens to you.
After they hang up, dial them back, and then don't mention my name the next time.
Right.
Joan, you know, very, very interesting things going on with the automobile industry and the American automobile industry, the American automobile universe that's losing money like gangbusters.
Right.
As opposed to the newer American automobile company that's making money. The Detroit folks, GM, made a big breakthrough with their union, didn't they, with the UAB?
Settlement, that's right.
What did they find out?
Well, in fact, and it came after a brief strike, but the strike lasted just a very short time. They came to an agreement over health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit complicated, but basically this will take care of and remove the GM's liability for this health care and really put it on the shoulders of the union.
Mm-hmm. Which sounds like a bad deal for the unions to me. The reason so funny to watch this leverage, Joan, in this negotiation.
Well, the union desperately needs job security.
And they had no leverage because they went on strike, and GM said, "Look, we got more cars than we can sell anyway. Have
Take
a good time
off. It's okay.
Yeah, we'll call you back one of these days."
Yeah.
So they didn't have much leverage. So the big thing for GM, Joan, is that what is it? Something like $1,600 of every car that they sell, not the profit, folks, but the revenue. $1,600 of everything that they take in, every car that they sell, I should say, goes to pay for the health care of their retirees.
Just the retirees, not the workers. So
yeah.
Think about that. That's
80%
tremendous.
Of all the health care that they spend goes to retirees.
Wow.
And did they get that moved over to the unions?
The retirees? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's it. Yes,
yes. It says it right here. It assumes control over a new trust fund for retiree health care.
This is the key. Now, of course, GM's going to have to pay into it.
Right.
But Joan,
yes, but they don't have ultimate liability.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Joan, this is going to be a bellwether. United turned it over to the. See, the good thing about this is when United went to bankruptcy, they turned it their retirement and all their benefits over to this
over
government
to the
corporation.
Government. Yeah.
Which I always forget the name of it. You know it, though, don't you?
Oh, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
She's
the PBGC.
So smart. She's so smart. It's the reason we love Joan, folks. She's
right.
So smart. But
right.
But anyway. But that's a government thing. The taxpayers are bailing that out. This is a union. The union's taking this over. Taxpayers are not bailing it out. And so this could be an incredible bellwether, Joan, for a lot of others, like Chrysler and like Ford and other companies.
And well, that's what we say, but with a caveat, if it works. If it works.
Well, Joan, here's the rest of the story. And there was an article in the op-ed page of the Journal yesterday. It was a great edition yesterday on how this issue, this thing with the UAW and the GM, is helping to lurch our country more toward consumerism of healthcare and away from universalism.
Oh, right.
Because these GM people are going to learn the meaning of copay.
Absolutely.
Like you and I do.
Well, I learned it a long time ago.
Yeah.
I learned deductible a long time ago, too.
And you and I have learned the I'm self-insured. I've got a catastrophic policy,
right.
But up to $5,000, I'm self-insured.
And I pay part of my premiums as an even though I'm an employee, and I don't begrudge the company at all. I think they're generous just to provide a health insurance plan at all.
And Joan, you're also a much smarter consumer of health care because of that too, aren't you?
You have to be, sure. It forces you to be.
And isn't that the key? Isn't that the essence of how we're going to solve our health care challenges in this country, Joan?
It has to be.
For
exactly.
us to become... Joan, you're starting to sound kind of conservative.
Scary,
here.
Huh?
I know.
Very
See,
scary.
I'm it's working, folks. My scheme is working.
<He's> campaign.
It's almost 10 till, ladies and gentlemen. Joan and I will... Oh, let's quickly... Joan, the Mexican trucks are going to be stopped, right? The government's going to stop... letting their Mexican trucks cross the border.
We say adios.
The controversial pilot program is coming to an end. That's what the Kiplinger editors say. And I know how much that impacts so many people across the country. Tintil, Joan and I will be right back. We got a lot more to come, including a special anniversary, 50th anniversary. Stay with us.
Oh, mirror in the sky, what is
there's some music that Joan Pride loves. Right, Joan?
That one isn't bad.
Well, you know who it is, right?
It's God.
Yeah. She's just kidding, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just kidding. But some back in the day, some people did say Clapton is God.
I think God only plays the air guitar, Joan.
And, right. And, well, that's true.
But we're just teasing, ladies and gentlemen. Don't send us any cards.
Yes, we're just joking.
That.
I'm sorry.
It's just a joke. We're just having some fun.
Yes.
But no, Joan is a big Clapton fan, as I am. Joan, about 50 years ago, I lived in East Gary, Indiana. Please don't sing.
I'm trying not to.
And there's a song about Gary, Indiana that she wants to sing. But I lived in East Gary, Indiana. I was just a little pup. And we went out in the yard on 2259 Warren Street in Gary, Indiana, East Gary, Indiana. And we sat in the yard, and we watched this little white light at night go across the sky. And it took, a couple of hours, a couple of 3 hours, but it went across the sky. It was like a shooting star that moved real slow, or like a star that, that moved. And it was not just the rotation of the galaxy. It was actually moving across the sky. 50 years ago today, that object was launched. Tell us about it.
Well, it was called Sputnik, and I'm learning a lot more about Sputnik now. I wasn't alive when Sputnik
you were just a gleam
launched.
In your daddy's eye in those days,
right?
Weren't you?
Exactly. Well, he'd met my mother, but they weren't even married yet. But from what I understand, Sputnik was kind of a turning point in terms of the U.S. getting into the space race and realizing that they could be beaten by the Russians in this area.
Joan,
and
there was
probably overreacting just a little bit.
There were lots of science fiction movies in those days. Have you ever seen the movie called The Day the Earth Stood Still?
No.
It's a classic. And, of course, don't forget War of the Worlds. Right? You know that one, right?
Oh, I've heard. Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it.
With the great Orson Welles narrative and then the movie and everything.
And people thinking it was real.
Exactly. And so there was incredible hysteria, potential hysteria waiting to break out at any time. Over science fiction, especially space issues.
Right.
And so here comes the Russians. They put up a little satellite. It was probably about the size of a not much bigger than a basketball, ladies and gentlemen, with a little antenna sticking out. It was not very big.
There was nothing in it. I mean, nowadays you send up a satellite, it has millions of dollars worth of technology in it. This had apparently nothing.
All it did was reflect the sun, but it beamed that little light down on Earth, down on America, and everybody got their knickers all wadded up over it.
Right.
And so we got our space program really began in earnest. It didn't begin that day because it really began with the... With going supersonic and building rockets and all that kind of thing, which started really in the 40s. But in terms of taking us into orbit, things took off right then, didn't it?
Well, no question. Literally and figuratively, they took off right there.
And then 3 years later, 4 years later, three or so years later, President Kennedy said, we'll put a man on the moon by the end of the decade. And so, right. and of course, we've led until, you know, all the way up until now, and I guess we lead, but who knows? And I don't know how important that is. Anyway, this is the 50th anniversary. Today is the 50th anniversary of this, of the Russian Sputnik.
Well, and it's interesting to think about where we were 50 years ago in terms of being scared of what was then the Soviet Union.
Right.
And looking at where the two countries are today.
Because see, we were aiming intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs, at each other back in those days.
And it was still what, 6 years or 5 years before the Cuban Missile Crisis would that, would
actually,
occur.
Actually, only about 3 years.
Oh, three.
Yeah. No, you, about 4 years. About four
60,
years.
Right. Well, it was during the Kennedy administration.
60.
So.
It was pretty early.
It had to
61.
Be 61 or so.
Yeah, 61 or so. So it'd be about 4 years.
Yeah.
Difference. And no, you're exactly right. I mean, there's a lot of there were a lot of concerns. We were worried about the whole nuclear thing, and so the Sputnik, you know, really wasn't. There was no direct connection between ICBMs and nuclear warheads and the Cold War. It was just a little, sort of a little gamesmanship by the Russians.
But wasn't there also some kind of controversy going on as to whether the space would be controlled by the military or civilians? And in this country, it ended up being controlled by a civilian agency, mm-hmm. NASA, of course.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. So a lot of things happened because of that little thing, a lot of reaction to it. And so anyway, we celebrate that that anniversary. Today's the 50th anniversary. Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
And we'll see you next time.
Okay, that sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back, I promise. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post on the around the world, putting themselves in harm's way for you and for me, ladies and gentlemen. I am very proud of them, and I know you are too. God bless them. God be with them.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.